Okay.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
And there was a brief silence. I'm not sure if I'm on. Ron, we're waiting for Ron to call in. He's having some issues on Skype. And Ron, I don't know if you can hear me, but your Skype is showing that you're not connected on Skype. It shows you're offline on Skype. So that never came up that you were online. That could be a possibility. So if you're...
Are you there?
Yes. Were you able to hear that?
We're on the air.
Yes. Were you able to hear that, though? Your Skype is showing that you're not online.
Really?
When I go down to your username, it says your username, and it says is offline. So that, I noticed, didn't pop up that you were connected on Skype.
Oh, well, it's everything here. It shows Skype. And
does it show online that you're on? Check mark
it. Yeah, it shows me online. I'm clicking on Skype, and it shows me online.
Well, that's
by the online.
Okay, now it just changed. Now it says you're online.
Yeah, well.
It's a live show, folks. We're having.
Yeah, it's a live show, folks. That's what happened.
Oh. Okay, now you're.
Okay. Now what am I doing?
You just typed something.
Actually, I'm clicking on call in via Skype on my thing, but I don't know if it's going to let me since I'm already in there on the phone here. So,
okay. Well, we'll see what happens. It's a live show. Things happen, and
we're having technical difficulties here, and that's too bad because we got ourselves a great program tonight.
Yes, we do. We have at least three guests.
Right.
Definitely three. Looks like they've confirmed. So, did you want to try and dial? Are you trying to dial with Skype?
Yeah, let me hang up. Don't run away from us, folks. We'll be right back. Let me try to get online the way I'm supposed to because it's a lot easier. I'm dialing through the landline now, and I'd rather be on the switchboard. So,
okay,
I'm going to disconnect here, and I'll hopefully pop right back in. So,
okay, no problem.
Hang around.
Okay, we're hanging around. For those of you just joining us, here's tonight's show. I don't know if this is because Ron's not on there. I don't know if you can hear me or not, or if you're just hearing silence until Ron gets on. Not real sure. But either way, we will have a show. So, welcome to Block Talk Radio, All About Wine Show. We have three guests rating to come on the program tonight through, let's see, we'll have one at about 7:05 if we get on there on time. And we'll have a couple others later on in the program, like about 7:30 or so, 7:45. And we'll be talking all about wine, the Finger Lakes region, part two. And I don't have any indication that I'm being heard on here, so I'll just sit back and wait till Ron comes up here and joins us back on the program. We are experiencing technical difficulties on one end here, a couple ends here. Let's see. I know he's online there, so that's a good sign. And for those of you just joining us, I don't know if my audio is up because the host is not connecting. Oh, hold on a second. Okay. Waiting for Ron to come in to the program. He was here earlier on his landline phone, and we're trying to connect to the switchboard, so we are experiencing some difficulties, and we'll begin the show as soon as possible. Please stand by. Okay, I don't know if you can hear me, but Ron is going to connect back onto the show in just a minute.
and I am back. Unbelievable. I don't know what the thing is. Anybody out there who's a Skype and a Blog Talk Radio expert, you know, give us a call. I'm having a heck of a time getting on Skype or getting on Blog Talk Radio through my Skype tonight. It's just, for some reason, I'm not connecting. So,
I'm having a technical difficulty or something. I don't know. DTR side too. Who knows? All right, let me bug out of here. And normally we chat beforehand and discuss things, but I'm going to go get Bill on the phone.
Okay, and we've got a good program tonight. Although we've blown 13 minutes of it already with the technical difficulties here, but we've got Bill from Dill's Run Winery in the Finger Lakes area. And I'm going to see if I can't pull up the winery here and so I can know what I'm talking to Bill about. That might be a nice thing to be able to do. But after we talk to Bill for a little bit, we've got Christine, who is part of the tourist and marketing of the Finger Lakes area. So she is going to be with us for a while. And then we have a author who has written a book on the Finger Lakes area, and he's going to be joining us in about a half hour, 40 minutes or so. So we've got a good program tonight. If it weren't for the technical difficulties right there at the beginning, we would probably be pretty deep in it already. So we apologize over and over again. That's what happens. So I see you've got a hold of Bill. Let's get Bill onto the program here. And let's see. Bill is, I think, in our green room. Bill, you with us?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. We apologize for taking time to get a hold of you. We had some technical difficulties at the beginning here, so it took us a few minutes to contact with you. So tell us about Dill's Run Vineyard and Winery.
Yes, Dill's Run Vineyard and Winery is 2 miles south of Union Springs and 4 miles north of Aurora on State Route 90 in Cayuga County, the town of Ledyard. We've been on the site for 9 years now, and we've had the tasting room open for this. It will be our third year. We serve about 16 different wines.
Wow.
We have a lot of fun with it. We do some native wines and some viniferas and do some blends. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you say some. Tell us what wines you are making now. Tell us about your wines.
Okay, well, we do a Pinot Noir. It's a
locally grown
Pinot Noir.
Yeah, is that local?
Yeah, all of our grapes have to come from New York. And, this year I'm going to have some grapes from my own place or my own vineyards. So before that, I've had to buy all New York State grapes, and most of them have come right from neighboring vineyards and wineries here in our own little town.
Uh-huh.
We have a Chardonnay. We do some Rieslings. And I do some Concord. I do a dry Concord. And I also do, the only fruit wine I actually do is an elderberry wine.
Oh.
I do a dry oak elderberry and a sweet elderberry. And that's actually how I got into the wine. When I was a young man, I was raised on a dairy farm in western New York. And so when the elderberries got ripe, they didn't cost me anything. And so I would pick them and turn them into wine. So that's how I got kind of hooked on it, so I still keep doing that.
Uh-huh. How long have you been making wine then?
Well, I've been making wine at Dill's Run for, this will be my sixth year now. Actually, I'm actually 70 years old, so I've been making wine ever since I was 16 with the elderberry, you know.
That was my question. So, a lot of years there.
Yeah, I've got quite a few years into it. It's fun. It's part science, part art, part luck.
Yeah.
I have a blend of my own that I call Black Dog that's actually beginning to take off. It's made from Chancellor and Catawba.
Oh.
And it's interesting that it tastes like sweet cherries when you start the original taste in your mouth, and then it goes dry. And I call it a great sunny afternoon wine,
mm-hmm.
right around the hot tub or the pool. And of course, I figure you can do it. Once you buy the bottle, you can do what you want with it. You can ice it or serve it warm or whatever. Once it's your wine, it's out of my custody.
Oh, the Black Dog is what color do you end up with on that? Is that just a light red?
It's a fairly medium red.
Oh.
It's not really a blush. It's the Chancellor carries a lot of color.
Uh-huh.
So you get a lot of red with that.
I noticed a spring mist. What is that?
Spring mist. Well, actually, that's Giesenheim.
Mm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the grape Giesenheim, but there's a Giesenheim University in Giesenheim, Germany.
Oh.
And they're sort of like Cornell University. They're a research school. And they developed this Giesenheim from Rieslings. And interestingly enough, they won't let us put Giesenheim on the bottle. So calling it spring mist. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure why they won't let you put the name on the bottle. They sell us the vines and everything. They're very happy to do that.
It's a white wine?
Yes, it's a white wine. It's similar to Riesling, but I do it a little sweeter. It's more than semi-dry. It's semi-sweet, I guess is what I would call it. It's about 4.5 residual sugar.
Oh, so it's even sweeter than most white Zinfandels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I
make this for people who like sweet wine.
And you have
Yeah, I have quite a few people who like sweet wine.
Since everybody does.
yeah, most people do. And since I'm trying to get this thing, off the ground, I'm making more sweet wines for people. But I do make some very dry, make a very dry Concord. I do a Catawba that's only got about 1 or 1.3 residual sugar. So
wow.
The Catawba, that's quite dry.
That is, really. Semi-dry Riesling. I notice you have a Riesling. What is the residual sugar on just your Riesling?
Well, actually, that's zero. So that's so dry, it's not truly a Riesling. Riesling usually has a point or so of sugar, especially in the German style. But I don't know. I just got carried away and made it zero residual. So my semi-dry Riesling is really what you would call a Riesling.
Because it's sweeter than your Riesling then.
Yes. And then I have a sweet Riesling that's really a semi-dry Riesling.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Cataz?
Yeah, that's another blend that we have, like Black Dog. As a matter of fact, my friend makes Kataz, that he's a hobbyist wine or vintner, and so he was hanging out with me, and he made Kataz, and that's actually where I got my black dog from, because I have to explain now, our dog Abe, he just showed up about 4 years ago. So he's a black lab and a Chesapeake cross, and now he thinks he owns the place. But anyway, my friend and I were bottling his special blend of Kataz, which is the Chancellor and Catawba blend. My friend had to go away for a couple hours, and while he was gone, I was sipping the Kataz, and I decided it could stand a little help, you know. So I adjusted the blend, and when he got back, my friend wanted to know what I had done with his Kataz. I said, well, really, it was Abe who did. Abe took a little sip and decided that it needed a little adjustment. He said, well, let me try it. And after he tried it, he thought that it actually was pretty good. And he said, well, we ought to call that black dog. And so I didn't want to argue with him any. So I, yeah, we'll call that black dog. But it's actually our number one seller right now.
Is it really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty unique, actually.
It sounds like it. You also have four rooms here that you have a bed and breakfast.
Oh, yeah, we have a bed and breakfast. That's Mr. Dill built this house in about 1830. Now, Mr. Dill was the original property owner. He was a Revolutionary War soldier, and he got the property for his services during the war, and the last house he built is the one I use for a B&B, and he built it about 1830. And I really believe that Brigham Young actually was a brick mason on the property.
Wow.
Not too many people know that, but Brigham Young started out as a young man as a brick mason.
Yes.
And
yes.
his family lived in the next village from us, and his mother's actually buried there. So I'm quite sure that the house, Brigham Young was the mason on the house, and probably the architect too.
I'm looking at for anyone out there on Dill's Run website, there is some lovely pictures of the rooms and the bed and breakfast, the building, a big brick building, and all that. So it's really, really looks like a very lovely place to stay and all that. It's really nice. Do you distribute anywhere? Do you?
Not really. I feel I'm too new to put too much in the stores. I want people to know me enough before so that my product doesn't sit on the shelf and, you know, lose the quality. So.
Right. Good point. Good point. And
yes.
No, I was just going to say, and since you've only been open a short time, did you have any problem with the government trying to get your business going and started and all that?
Well, not really. It's just that it's hard to, if you're not really experienced, it's hard to figure out what they want, you know, what form you have to fill out. And it's like, I'm the kind of character that when I read something, I make it more difficult than I should for myself, you know. Well, an example is we have an apple wine that we're just getting ready to release, and we were making labels up for it, and I had put Finger Lakes wine on the label.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it was rejected, and so when I got the thing, I the rejection. I printed it off, and I just looked at it and got cross-eyed and couldn't figure out anything. And I thought, oh God, you know. So I gave the printout to my wife, and she read it over, and she says, no, all you got to do is take Finger Lakes off the label, because Finger Lakes is only allowed on Finger Lake grape wine.
Right.
I said, really? Is that all? I mean, all those words and lines and
yeah, remove Finger Lake.
That piece of paper meant remove Finger Lake. So I had the artist remove the Finger Lakes, and it was approved just the other day.
Very good.
Yes.
It sounds like a great place up there. Do you open year round, or do you close during the winter months, or what?
No, I stay open year round. If I happen to decide to take a little vacation, I might go away for a week or two or whatever. And I'm always open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 5, unless something else comes up. But I'm also very willing to open by appointment, or, you know, if somebody wants to do a wine tasting and they just call me or pull in and call, or I happen to see them, we don't care. We're pretty informal about how things are done.
Did you and your wife run it?
Well, my son helps a little too, yeah.
Oh,
it's just a small family operation.
Well, it sounds exciting. The best of luck to you on that. Before we get off here, could you pass on, you did most of it at the beginning, but I'll ask you to do it again, your website, a Facebook page if you have it, your email address, your location, everything. So in case anybody would like to check out Dill's Run Vineyard and even your bed and breakfast, they have the information.
Oh, okay. Well, my website is dillsrun.com. And that covers both the winery and the B&B. My personal email address is William Heary, one word lowercase, @yahoo.com. And my phone number is 315-277-6102. And I'll answer that practically any time if I hear it ringing. I'm more than happy to do that. And we're right on the eastern shore of Cuba Lake. The only upcoming thing that I'm working on is getting my distillery license.
Oh!
The state of New York has decided to allow us to have a distiller's license. And they've been doing that for a little bit now, and I've decided, well, you know, if I'm making wine, maybe I might as well be doing some distilling.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So that sounds like an exciting addition to the whole operation there.
Yeah, that's quite the thing. I'm looking around to see if I can find some friends who are interested and experienced in distilling, and I always like to find some friends, you know, to sort of work together with. It's a lot of fun if you have a group.
Well, fantastic. Well, best of luck to you. I'll tell you what, if I'm ever up in that area, I will definitely check you out. And I thank you so much for joining us on the program tonight. We really do appreciate it. Sorry it took us a few minutes after what we said we were going to call you. Again, technical difficulties here. So, again, good luck to you, and if you like to be on the program again, just shoot me an email. We can get you back on the program when you get your distillery license or any of that.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for the info, and everyone out there, have a good evening. It's going to be a nice autumn evening, I believe.
Yeah, it is down here, too. So thank you very much, Bill. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Okay,
and
we're good.
Bill is gone, but listening in the background the whole time, we have Christina. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Christina. Christina Chile, I believe it's pronounced. Christina is the marketing and public relations manager for Finger Lakes Wine Country Tourism
Marketing Association, a big whole bunch of words, meaning that she tries to get people to go to Finger Lakes and visit the wineries and the buy wines up there. So we'll get Christina on the line. Christina, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for being on hold and waiting there. Sorry about the delay in time. We had ourselves a little technical glitch at the beginning, and it drove us nuts.
Oh, no
but,
problem.
We're here.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I mean, computers, what can you say?
Yes.
We start relying on them so much when something goes wrong, we just throw our hands up in the air and shake our head. That's it.
Exactly.
That's all we can do.
That's when we have a glass of wine.
And I'm doing that. Believe me, I'm doing that. That's one
Perfect.
Of the things I do on every program is have a glass of wine.
Absolutely.
So as a marketing and public relations manager of Finger Lakes Wine Country Tourism and Marketing Association, what big old title there.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, I've been with the organization for going on 4 years now, and it's probably the best job ever. I'm so lucky. The Finger Lakes region is absolutely gorgeous in upstate New York. It's about, to kind of get your bearings, it's in kind of the western central portion of the state, and it's right just south between Rochester and Syracuse to the Pennsylvania border. So it's a really large area, and I represent the wine country region of the Finger Lakes. And so, of course, all of the wineries, for the most part, are situated right around the actual lakes. And there's so much to do and see outside of the wineries, too. So I represent the four major wine trails, Canandaigua, Cayuga, Seneca, and Keuka Lakes. And then also we have some great museums and, of course, Watkins Glen International, everyone knows, the racetrack up here, and great accommodations. And so I work just to promote tourism for the region, and I love it. It's so much fun. And what better region, in my opinion, could you represent? So I love
it. Yeah. You from that area?
I am. I was born and raised in Elmira, New York, and it's just a little bit south of the lakes. And I grew up going to a cottage on Keuka Lake, and it's beautiful. So I definitely love the region. I moved away for a little while, but I came back. This is where my heart lies.
What you mentioned the four wine trails. Information on each of the wine trails. How many wineries on each of the trails?
Well, the largest one is Seneca Lake. Seneca Lake Wine Trail has, I think at this point, they have 34 wineries around the lake.
Wow.
In general, the wine region of the Finger Lakes has over 100 wineries at this point. It grows by leaps and bounds. Every year we hear more wineries starting up, and everyone is flocking to start their own winery. And it's amazing how much it's grown just even in 4 years since I started, and within the 10 years before that is when the real big boom happened. So Seneca Lake, it's the largest one. It's that long lake right down the center, and it's about I think it's close to 34, 35 miles long, and all around the lake are tons of wineries. And so that's the largest wine trail. And you can learn more about Seneca Lake Wine Trail on SenecaLakeWine.com.
The Finger Lakes area consists of what, between 81 and 15? Is that about right?
That's about right, 81, and I like to say like 390. It's like the Interstate 90 goes across the top from Syracuse to Rochester, and then down at the southern end it's Route 86, or Interstate 86, and then to the east is 81, and then to the west is 390. That, and kind of within that, those like four interstates, is just the most amazing little awesome center of the world. So you can,
obviously,
you know, find
you're good
so
at
much
your job.
Well, you know.
Well, 390
it's
is 15. No, I see.
I was
looking at a map and it showed 15. It didn't show it as 390. That's why I was confused there.
Funny.
So
there
it is
go.
Surrounded
well,
by four
it.
Interstates in there.
It is, so it's super easy to get to. And right in the center there, that's the Seneca Lake Wine Trail. Another one is the Cayuga Wine Trail. That's the second largest. It has 16 member wineries. You can, that's actually the oldest wine trail in the region. They are celebrating, I think, 27 years this year, 28 years. And
wow.
So they've been around quite a while. They were actually the first wine trail organization in America. So
wow.
Lots of good history in the Finger Lakes, believe it or not. So, and they have 16 member wineries. You can learn more about Cayuga Wine Trail at CayugaWineTrail.com. Then they have the Cayuga Wine Trail, and Cayuga and Cayuga, it sounds so similar. One's with a K, and that's Cayuga, and that's the Y-shaped lake. And Cayuga is with a C, and that's the longer lake to the east of Seneca Lake, that longest one. And so Cayuga actually has some really amazing history. They have 8 member wineries, and one of them is actually Dr. Frank Vinifera Wine Cellars, which Dr. Frank is actually credited with that beginning of the vinifera revolution in the Finger Lakes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, actually, it was going to be, it's 50 years ago, next year, in 1962, that winery actually opened after Dr. Constantine Frank came over from the Ukraine and decided that the Finger Lakes had such a similar to the areas in France and Germany, that he said, you know what, those European varieties, those vinifera grapes, are going to do so well in the Finger Lakes of New York State. And so he planted them, and the rest is history. Now we're making some of the most world-class, well-known Rieslings in the world. So we have a lot to thank Dr. Frank for. And so, again, the Cayuga Wine Trail is where you can find Dr. Frank's wine cellars. And then the last, but certainly, wine trail that we have is the Canandaigua Wine Trail, and that's around Canandaigua Lake. All of the wine trails are named for the lake they surround. So, and that has, I think, 5 member wineries, but it's also home to the New York Wine and Culinary Center. So it's a great first stop for people coming to the region. Yes.
Oh, the area, you mentioned the wine trails. Obviously, not every winery is on a trail then, is it?
No, no. So the wine trails, I like to think of them as more or less a marketing organization. It sounds silly, but the wine trails are a group of wineries coming together for the same purpose, to promote themselves, to get visitation. A trail is used kind of metaphorically, but they all surround the lakes, but there's tons of wineries not a member of a wine trail. There's wineries that are not right on the lake. And so there's so many wineries within the region. There's literally something for everyone. And you can actually visit FingerLakesWineAlliance.com, and that has all kinds of information about all of the wineries, all the different AVAs, and what kind of wines are grown in the region, and actually has some really fantastic information about all of the wineries and grapes and just the climate and everything.
What is that website again?
It is FingerLakesWineAlliance.com. So that's really the group of wine growers and winery owners that get together and work to promote Finger Lakes wine. My organization that I work for is Finger Lakes Wine Country, and we're FingerLakesWineCountry.com, and that's more of the tourism angle. Of course, wine is our leading lady, but we also have tons to do in the region. It's beautiful, lots of outdoor activities. Of course, the lakes, we have lots of fun water activities, boating, hiking, and biking, and everything surrounding the lakes. But then we also have some amazing cultural centers. So we have lots of history, and it's actually has some pretty cool stuff, which the burial place of Mark Twain. Not many people know that, but we have lots of cool history. Yeah, so that's in Elmira. And then, of course, we have the Corning Museum of Glass in Corning, New York. So, and just lots of aviation history. So something for everyone. Really, the whole family will love the Finger Lakes.
It sounds fascinating. The whole area sounds, I'll tell you what, I have learned so much from talking to wineries, but this New York, just the Hudson River Valley area and all the history there, and then now the Finger Lakes area, is just amazing how much history has taken place up in that state and that part of the country. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. There's so much going on here, and We have wine to boot, so what more could you ask for?
What more can you ask for, huh? Yeah. Well, Christine, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this evening. It was enjoyable and quite informative. You told me, I talked to Christine earlier today, and she says, I don't know too much about the wines. Well, you know enough that, you know, gets people excited about it, and you're excited about it, and that's really what it takes. So,
absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you having me on the show, and we look forward to hosting everyone in the Finger Lakes. It's a great place to visit, and we're actually gearing up to celebrate our 2010 vintage for all of our Rieslings next week. So, you can, again, at FingerLakesWineAlliance.com is where you can find out all about the 2010 vintage. It's going to be spectacular. So we're really excited about that.
Are you on Blog Talk Radio also?
I am, believe it or not. I actually have my own Blog Talk Radio show. You can visit blogtalkradio.com/FingerLakesWineCountry. We do two shows a week. They're 15-minute shows. I have Escape to the Finger Lakes, where I interview different folks around the region about upcoming events and special things going on. And then we do a weekly show on Friday mornings called Wine Country Insider, where we talk about the exciting things coming up in the next couple weeks. And so I encourage all of your listeners to come out and check us out and learn more about the Finger Lakes, and there's so much going on.
blogtalkradio.com/FingerLakesWineCountry. Finger Lakes Wine Country. Okay, got that, everyone out there? Finger Lakes Wine Country. blogtalkradio.com/FingerLakesWineCountry. So you can tune in, and when is your live programs again?
My program, typically, the Friday one, the Wine Country Insider, is at 9:30 a.m. every Friday, so I'll be on bright and early tomorrow morning. And, again, it's only 15 minutes, so everyone has that much time to spare in the morning when you're drinking your coffee. And then I do the Escape to the Finger Lakes every Monday at noon, but sometimes it does change, just depending. So I just encourage everyone to check out our FingerLakesWineCountry.com, our website. We also have, of course, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/FingerLakesWineCountry again. And we always update what's coming up, when our shows are going to be, but typically Mondays I do my Escape to the Finger Lakes show.
Okay, great. I just wanted you to slow down and say that again, because I wanted to be sure people out there heard and understood and knew what was going on. So
absolutely.
Fantastic. That it sounds, I didn't realize you had a Blog Talk Radio too, so it sounds great. So anyone who wants to listen to her, and if they want to get a hold of you, again, it's just FingerLakesWineCountry.com, correct?
FingerLakesWineCountry.com. If you'd like some personalized travel advice about coming to the Finger Lakes, if you have questions about Finger Lakes wine, perhaps where your Finger Lakes wine might be distributed, or how to get your hands on a bottle of Finger Lakes wine, you can always give our office a call. We're traditionally open 8:30 to 5 o'clock Monday through Friday. You can always leave a voicemail, too, for us, and we'll get right back to you. Our 800 number, toll-free, is 800-813-2958. We look forward to talking to you, and absolutely visit our website, FingerLakesWineCountry.com. You can request a copy of our free travel magazine all about the region, and has lots of great information. And we're just so excited to get the word out about Finger Lakes wine. I think that we have lots to show off and lots for everyone to enjoy.
Fantastic, Christine. Thank you very much for your time and your enthusiasm. And if anyone wants to find out anything about Finger Lakes wines and stuff, there is your source, FingerLakesWines.com. So that's FingerLakesWinesCountry.com.
Yeah.
And Jenny is the one that answers the phone there. She did today when I called up there, so.
She will absolutely help you out, and we just look forward to talking to everyone and getting everyone excited about the Finger Lakes.
Okay, fantastic. Again, thank you so much for being on the program, and best of luck to you, and when I'm up in that area, you will be my first phone call before I go.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Yep.
You're quite Thank welcome, you. Christine. Thank you very
All right.
much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too now. Bye. All right. Interesting. Christine had mm-hmm. a lot of information for us there. We have,
They have a beautiful website, too. Sorry about that. I was looking at the website.
I was
very nice.
Is it?
Yeah.
I was floating around here doing
yeah.
other stuff here, and I didn't catch that
yeah.
the website. But
very nice.
A lot of information. And if you're planning on a trip to Finger Lakes area, I'll tell you what. Your first stop has to be FingerLakesWineCountry.com because, you get a free booklet or brochure and all that other stuff. They'll start guiding you in the right direction. We have a special guest tonight. Let me give you a quick background about what happened here. Our program last week, I don't know if you've listened to it yet or if you all tuned in on it yet or not, but our program last week, we didn't have any guests. We were a little shy on guests, to say the least, because of circumstances. And so I ended up talking a lot about the lake area and different things like that. I got an email from of one of our listeners, Sid, who pointed out to me that the Finger Lakes area and the wineries up there are so much more than just the lakes. And I had to agree with him. But one of the things that he did say was that there's a great book that has just came out, and he mentioned that he's not much of a book reader on wines, but he said this one he picked up and he couldn't put down until he finished it. And he gave me an email address and the Facebook page for the author and for the book. And I got a hold of him, and he agreed to come on with us tonight. The author is Evan Dawson, and his book is called A Summer in a Glass. And it basically what is a coming of age I lost it here. Well, I'll tell you what. Instead of me telling you about it, we've got Evan waiting for us. I'm going to bring Evan here, and Evan can tell us about his book and everything. Hello, Evan.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm doing really quite well. Glad you can join us tonight. This is great. Tell us about your book and tell us how it came about and tell us what you did. You have the floor. Let's fill us in about your book about the Finger Lakes wine region here.
Yeah, sure. Well, you've been talking to folks from the Finger Lakes. I am not here to tell you that this is the greatest wine region in the world. I am here to tell you as a journalist that there are a lot of wonderful stories that have come out of this region that I think for a long time, maybe the last 10 years or so, people didn't hear, people didn't know about. And when it comes to wine, I don't mind sort of the technical aspects, the tasting notes, et cetera, but I'm really drawn to the personal stories of wine. I'm enamored with the sacrifice and hard work that goes into making it. And in the Finger Lakes, we have a very unique region. A lot of American wine regions, I think, are probably this way, but certainly in the Finger Lakes, it's not an old world kind of wine region where you have families passing down a tradition from generation to generation. You have a tapestry of wineries here with a long and wide variety of scenarios, but some of the more inspiring and interesting ones were Europeans who've come here, people have come from around the world, people have come from California to the Finger Lakes, instead of sort of the stereotypical assumption that if you did well in a small region like the Finger Lakes, you could graduate to Europe or California. Instead, it's the other way around. You've got 10 or 12 or more who've come here, and they've joined the people who grew up here and made their living here and stay here or went around the world and came back. And the question I had as a writer was why? What brought them here? What about a German in a small village whose family has made wine since the late 1300s would come to the Finger Lakes and give up a 600-year-old operation? What about a Danish-born winemaker who grew up in Provence, whose family had 300 acres in the south of France? What would draw him to the Finger Lakes? What about a Canadian who learned in Australia and made wine in New Zealand and had never heard of the Finger Lakes? How did he get here? And how do we benefit from that? What about a local boy who grew up in Watkins Glen in the middle of the Finger Lakes and only fell in love with wine when he was drinking and playing his banjo on the Russian River itself. Well, why come home? Why not stay on the West Coast? So those are the stories of the book, and I find them inspiring, and the gratifying thing is, since the book has come out this year, a lot of people seem to have found them pretty inspiring as well.
Fantastic. I have to admit, I haven't read it. I just found out about it about 6 days ago, and I've read some of the excerpts from it. Your webpage and different things have little excerpts, and so I've able to read a little bit of it. Fascinating book. Did you were you able to talk to all these people individually and get their stories, or were they a compilation of different people you talked to about these people?
Well, you'll find when you pick up the book that it was about 2.5-3 years of research, and I had a little digital recorder that went with me everywhere. I thought as a writer that I couldn't be credible unless I did every single job associated with winemaking. And I volunteered. I worked harvest. I from shoveling rice holes to adding yeast, to working the tasting room for drunk bachelorette parties, to doing everything you can imagine with the process. I volunteered and I did it, and then I spent a long time sort of trying to figure out who the most compelling personal stories were in the region, and convincing some of these folks to let me take them to dinner, let me tag along during some of their more private tastings, and then frankly, you know, the book is certainly a wine book, but it's much more a book about people, and the end result is a book, I think, that really drills into the personal side of wine, and they spent hours upon hours with me, and I ended up with many, many, many hours on a digital recorder, and the only thing around that was not enjoyable about this process was transcribing all of those hours. That was a lot of work.
I can imagine, cutting it down.
It was worth it.
I can imagine. Quite a few questions come up to me while we're talking here. And the first one, is this your first adventure into writing a book, or are you is this something you've done your whole life, or what is your background on this?
I grew up always sort of thinking of myself as a writer and thought I would be in print journalism. I actually ended up in broadcast journalism. So for the day job, I anchor morning news in Rochester, New York. It's the ABC News affiliate in Rochester. Yeah. So in the morning I get up and I put on a couple of, just like you, Ron, I put on foundation and bronzer every morning. And,
I have to get myself all ready for the radio.
It's exactly right. You know, you and I put on our bronzer and foundation, you know, one brush at a time. I mean, we're just like anybody else in the world. But no, that's the day job, and I always enjoyed writing, and I do a lot of freelance writing. I do some freelance wine writing for a variety of publications, Tasting Panel Magazine, Palette Press, among some others, and not always about Finger Lakes, but I happen to live here and appreciate the effort going into this region. It's a young region. I think there are mistakes to be made, but it's thrilling to be here with the vanguard of a new sort of a generation and understanding of winemaking. I mean, if you can imagine, and the Finger Lakes may not be Bordeaux or whatever, but choose a wine region that is hundreds of years old now and try to imagine what it was like being there in the first generation or two of winemaking there. There's going to be a lot of mistakes, but there's going to be a lot of excitement too. And I think there's a sense that that's what we're witnessing now in the Finger Lakes.
We had an opportunity to talk to the winemaker at Brotherhood, the winery in the Hudson River Valley. And that was fascinating in the fact that the years that they've existed there and the things that they have done. And it seems that the Finger Lake, well, it seems like most of New York has a long history of wine and winemaking, not just the Brotherhood area, although they survived simply because they were large enough to make it through the Prohibition. But the whole state of New York has this tremendous background of wines and grapes and winemaking, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, and, you know, I it's interesting. You know, you and I talk in the American sense about a long history. For American winemaking, it is a long history. I mean, Napa and some of the West Coast will claim a little bit longer of a winemaking history, especially when it comes to vinifera. But, we're certainly close to the longest in America. Now, obviously, Old World Europe has this beat by a few centuries. But having said that, the Finger Lakes is really honed in on Riesling as a variety that is, in my mind, among the best in the world. I write in the book that vinifera grapes tend to be like Clark Kent. They show up for work, they punch the clock, they do a good job. And at the end of the day, you may or may not notice the semi-good-looking guy in glasses who did a good job, and you say thanks, and that's it. But once in a while, Clark Kent grapes, vinifera grapes, will find a phone booth in the world, and we don't always know where it's going to be, but when they end up in the phone booth, they go in as Clark Kent and they come out as Superman. And we know there are phone booths for Riesling in Germany, in the Mosel Valley, and the Falls, in the Nahe, Rheingau, and Rheinhessen. We know there is a phone booth in Alsace, certainly in the Wachau. And, lo and behold, I think there's a phone booth in the Finger Lakes of New York for Riesling. And that is what the winemakers up here have discovered, that you can really make some potentially world-class wines from Riesling here. Now, the interesting thing is down in the Hudson Valley, as you talk with Brotherhood, and down in Long Island, such different places, even though they're sometimes 3-4 hours apart, Long Island about 5-6 hours to wine country from the Finger Lakes. I mean, it is very much like being in Europe and saying, okay, well, what works in Burgundy is not going to be working in Sardinia. I mean, that's just, right. There's that much distance between them, but it's one state, so it's quite diverse, and it's quite an interesting place to be.
Yeah, you mentioned something there. I've always said that everywhere in the world has an identity for a wine. Now, you mentioned California, and you think of the heavy reds of Napa. You mentioned New Zealand, and Sauvignon Blanc comes to mind. Germany, the Rieslings and the whites. France, heavy reds. Just about everywhere in the world you mentioned, there is an identity, except for New York. And you mentioned New York, and you think Finger Lakes. But now, and it's good to hear this, and I've always said that they have the capabilities in the Finger Lakes area of making world-class Rieslings that would blow everybody out of the water, that would, when you say Rieslings, your thought immediately goes to the Finger Lakes area because they have the climate, the soil, the terroir, whatever you want to call it, they have it there to do Rieslings beyond anyone's imagination.
Yeah, and here's one of the big differences. And the subtitle of my book is The Coming of Age of Winemaking in the Finger Lakes. And what I always say that means is, to me, that means an understanding that you don't have to mimic anybody else. You don't have to try to tell people who come into your tasting room that we're just like Germany, God forbid, our reds are just like Napa. I mean, my goodness, cool climate should not be mimicking warm climate. We don't make Grenache in the Finger Lakes for a reason. But, for a while, even in the Finger Lakes, you would hear, and I understand why on the pragmatic side, but you would hear people invoke Germany and comparisons, et cetera. And, you always want to shoot for the best, but sometimes, if mediocrity, I'm getting ahead of myself. Sometimes imitation can be the sincerest form of flattery, but I tend to think imitation is the sincerest form of mediocrity. You're never going to, or you're rarely going to equal what you're trying to mimic instead of trying to find your own personality. And I think in the last decade, the Finger Lakes has figured out that we don't have to be Germany, we don't have to be Austria, we don't have to be Alsace, and there is a real, you can call it terroir, there's a real sense of place to the wines here that stands on its own that we should be proud of, and that is a huge, huge stride forward. That's part of what the book is sort of highlighting.
Oh, great. I mean, it's just, I've always thought that New York and particularly the Finger Lakes had the capabilities of just the identity being Riesling, and it's good to hear that you feel the same way too. I noticed in your as you were just describing stuff, you seem to have quite a strong knowledge of wine and wine regions and all that. Is this simply because of the book, or are you a closet wine master?
No, certainly not a wine master. But when I write about wine, it's not always about the Finger Lakes. And I think, Ron, I think there's a real challenge for developing wine regions when it comes to regional palates, whether it's for the writers who cover them or the winemakers themselves. And I say that because The Finger Lakes, as an example, has, I think, 106 wineries. And that's a lot of wineries. And there's a lot of mediocrity, and there's a lot of bad wine, and there's a lot of very, very good wine. You know, it's not all great. But when you meet the winemakers who are among the top shelf of winemaking, you will note very, very quickly that they either have a worldly palate or they've traveled the world or they, you know, every night they're not drinking their own wine. And every night they're not drinking a Finger Lakes wine. And certainly you want to experience and track your own wines and track what your region can do. But there is a real risk, I think, to not only getting a regional palate, as they say, you know, only really knowing what you can do and not understanding what the world can do, but I think even getting a chip on your shoulder. I have met some winemakers who just about all they drink at home is their own wine or their own region, and then they want to talk in qualitative terms about what is produced elsewhere in the world, but they really don't drink it. And it doesn't make sense to me that, you know, if you truly love wine, that that's all you're drinking is your own region. So, you will find me drinking. Lately, I've been hung up on 2009 Cru Beaujolais to the point where I'm trying to convince myself to stop drinking them because I think they'll drink better in a few years, but they're some of the best values in the world. Yes, yes. You know, we drink a lot of Loire is some of the best value in the world. You know, we drink Moselle wines when we can. So we drink all over the world, and we're always looking for good value.
Yeah, Argentina, the Pinot Noirs out of Argentina now, I think, are one of the best values in the world, as a side note here. So, but,
well, hold on. Let me just jump in here and say, Ron, you said Pinot out of Argentina, right?
Yeah.
It's important for any writer to admit what they know and what they don't know. You know, how many writers do you talk to act like they've had every wine ever produced everywhere? And that gets a little grating. So I will happily tell you, I don't think I've ever had a Pinot from Argentina, but because of this conversation, I will now seek it out.
Yes, they are quite good coming out of there and really reasonably priced. So that even makes it better, it seems.
Very good.
I understand what you're saying about so many people drinking. We have had conversations with wineries. Well, we're working our way across the country, and we're doing alphabetical by the states. And so obviously in New York now, we've covered over half the states in the country. And it's interesting that you stated that a lot of the wineries just drink their own wine, because we've noticed that as a point in quite a few that we've talked to. And the ones who we have talked to that are knowledgeable, and you can tell the knowledge, is the ones that will mention other wines that they've had. And that really is it gives credence to the fact that they do know what they're talking about, more so than just trying to stay with one region or one type of wine, particularly their own.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in the Finger Lakes now, that top dozen or so wineries and winemakers, it's a combination of European immigrants, Americans who've come from other regions, and Americans who are right here from the Finger Lakes who've traveled and decided to come home, but they have this worldly understanding that, you know, your wine should be its own personality, but it should fit in the context of the global wine world. You know, I mean, you ought to be able to articulate what is the Finger Lakes Riesling and how does it generally compare to an Alsatian or a Moselle or a Rheingau or a Rheinhessen. And those are important conversations to have, and some of the best here are having those conversations all the time. Some of the best winemakers here are just so much fun, not just to cover, but, you know, on the rare occasions that you can get them not working, because those guys are working all the time, and those men and women are working all the time. When you can get them to sit down and have a meal with you, they are so much fun, because, you know, if you're a wine geek, you know, with Morten Hallgren from Ravines, who's a Danish-born who grew up in southern France, or with Dave Whiting from Watkins Glen, I mean, you feel like you can talk wine all night long, and it never gets old, and that, to me, is one of the joys of wine. And we've got a lot of that here now. It's really, really exciting development.
And the thing is, and to, you know, bring up the point, that's becoming that way all around the country. The Finger Lakes area is a big area, and it's got a lot of history to it and everything. But when you start talking to any wine person around the country, you can just tell that this love of the grape and of wine and of the whole aspect of it, it just comes out in how they talk and what they do, and they can sit and talk for hours about what they're making and what they have and what they foresee in the future in the wine industry and the wines. And it's exciting, totally exciting.
Well, I'm very much excited about it, and one of the things I get excited about, and you probably do too, talking to wineries from around the country as you do, which I think is outstanding, is that, you know, when you get over this notion that you've got to make a great Chardonnay or a great Merlot, and, you know, because the average American consumer expects that in your tasting room, then you can try to really figure out what you do well. And what if what you do really well is Riesling and Blaufränkisch or Riesling and Lemberger? You know, what if it's a more exotic grape? What if it's Teraldego? Well, what if it's a variety that the average consumer hasn't heard of? Well, you've got an uphill climb, but you feel like you're in on a secret that the rest of the country's not in on. I mean, I know in Virginia and Missouri, they still feel like they've got Norton as a secret, let alone Petit Verdot and Viognier. I mean, that is really exciting stuff, as opposed to just feeling like, well, everybody makes a Chardonnay, so I guess I better make a Chardonnay. You know, when you get past that, it can be pretty exciting.
And you're so right on that. I mean, it's just I've talked to a couple of wineries up in the Finger Lakes area, and the ones I've talked to are really excited about the Riesling grape and what they can do with it. And it's not just a sweet Riesling. In fact, I don't know if you heard the first part of the program. I talked to Bill from Dill's Run Winery, and he makes a very dry Riesling, he said. He said it's an extremely dry Riesling, and so many people expect the Riesling to be sweet and to come out with a different style, which will surprise most people's palates, is just exciting in itself.
Absolutely. That was a very important development in the sort of the coming of age of the Finger Lakes that we detail in the book. There was a German immigrant named Hermann Wiemer, and his winery has become iconic in New York State wine. Hermann was a German who was very much an old world German, and he got here and he realized that Riesling was his passion, but Americans were sort of not digging it. They were, you know, it was not very much in vogue in the late 70s, early 80s. And so he put right on the bottle, he put dry Riesling, as if he wanted to take the consumer's head, bang it against the wall and say, this is not a training wheels wine. This is not a training wheels wine. This is not a sweet, sugary dessert wine. You know, for all you people who think that all you drink is big, chewy red wines and that makes you sophisticated, you can drink a Riesling because it's dry. Well, you put it right on the bottle. And that all of a sudden started an avalanche of dry Riesling making in the Finger Lakes, and people said, wow, I can put the red on the bottle, and all of a sudden people will take it more seriously. Now, having said that, Ron, I take Riesling seriously at its most sweet, at the TBA style, all the way down to the most rapier, no residual sugar, cut your tongue like a knife kind of wine. It can be, and it can be bad at all levels, and it can be mind-blowingly good at all levels. But the neat thing is, you know, like you say, when it comes to dry, I think people hear Riesling and sometimes they think, well, that's sort of a handshake kind of a wine. That'll get you into wine, as opposed to thinking, wow, what a complex grape that can make wine great at every style.
And, you know, and I get so many people, you know, into my winery down here. People walk in and say, well, I love a Riesling. And I go, okay, but isn't that a lot like walking in and saying, I love a hamburger? You can get one at McDonald's, you can get one at TGI Fridays or something. I mean, it's just, the range of a Riesling is just from probably the largest range you're going to find on any grape as far as being able to make it into any style and still have it be very good.
Yeah,
and
I couldn't agree more. Just like burgers, I like a burger with maple barbecue bacon, and I like a plain burger, and I like a cheeseburger. You like it all. I like a bison burger. I don't really like a veggie burger. I'm not really there yet.
I'm not either. I understand
that.
But, you know, this is one good thing about the Finger Lakes area, though, is that they are coming out with Rieslings in the gamut of styles. They're not limiting themselves to saying, here's a sweet Riesling because this is what everybody wants, or something like that. I just, in fact, a lot of them I've talked to up in New York, I mean, in their areas too, the ice wines they're making in New York, most of them aren't using the Riesling grape. They're using other grapes.
Exactly. They're using Vidal, or they're using, sort of a wide range of, I don't want to say lesser grapes, but other grapes. That's true. And, you know, you talk about feeling like, well, you know, people, it's easier to make a sweet wine to appeal to people. One of the best wineries in the Finger Lakes is Ravines, and Morton and Lisa Hallgren own Ravines, and it's still a relatively small producer. Everything they make are sort of dry, you know, even the dry, crisp whites, they're the Riesling they make, which is one of the regional standards. They make two bottlings. They make a standard bottling and then a single vineyard bottling, and they're 0.3% residual sugar, which is, you know, if you don't know residual sugar counts, that's just very low residual sugar. It, you know, it's like putting a power cord in your mouth and just, you know, sucking down and just crackles.
Right.
And Lisa, for a while, said to Morton, you know, we could, you know, if you make one sweet wine, we could probably pay a few more bills. So he finally made a sweet wine. He made, they're called their Cuca Village White, was just, you know, it's just their everyday summer sipper, and it's pretty sweet. I mean, I think it's got 0.9% residual sugar, which is the sweetest wine he makes. And, you know, a lot of his colleagues around him have wines all the way up the scale. So, yeah,
right.
That you talk about a risk. He stuck his neck out and said, I'm going to make wines the best way I know how, and, you know, hopefully we'll have enough of an audience. That will be a risk. But, you know, he also came from a family that had everything taken away from them back in France, and he thought, well, risk-taking is easy. When you lose your whole estate and you lose your whole family, it's easy to take risks grape growing and winemaking. And that story I really enjoyed telling in the book.
That sounds like an interesting concept to approach on winemaking. You have to make wines that sell. This is something I learned a long time ago when I got had a winery. We don't always make wines that we like. We make wines that sell. That way we can stay in the business. But invariably, there's always that one or two that almost every winemaker makes that is their passion. And they make it in the style that they like, and they make it the way they like it. And it becomes something that they become very proud of, and people discover it, and it becomes something that it identifies the winery and identifies them.
Yeah, I agree. And the Finger Lakes, they sort of jokingly behind the scenes refer to them as debt-paying wines. You know, if you make, say, 18,000 cases of wine a year, 12,000 may be debt-paying wines, and then one-third of your production is a highly focused, you know, wine of however you want to make it, sweet, dry, et cetera,
right.
But it's supposed to be world-class. Or you're making 6,000 cases of wine a year, but 5,000 are the debt-paying wine. So, you know, the ravines, this operation I was describing, they don't really have any debt-paying wines, and that was quite a risk to launch an operation and say, we're not doing that. We're going to rely on the winemaking and convincing and educating our customers that, you know, this is what we want to do, and hopefully we'll sell the wines. And now they're doing that. But trust me, if I built a winery tomorrow, and I have no intention of doing it, I don't know how you guys do it, I would probably have a debt-paying wine on there because, you know, we all have accountants, and they all have our phone numbers. And, you know,
true.
We do have to pay bills. So, yeah.
And that's very important. I mean, it's just, you know, you have to have the wines that people are going to come in and buy. It's amazing how many wineries will start out. I've talked to some of them. Well, we start out doing this, but then we make this, we make that, we make this, we make that. And that's basically what you're saying. Those are your debt-paying wines.
Well, that's okay, too. I mean, as you know, Ron, I mean, you talk to folks who love those wines, and that's great. If that's what you dig, that's what you dig. I mean, it may not be what absolutely drives you to the bone to make, but if people are digging it, I think that's fine. I'm not somebody who think I'm going to phrase this correctly. I agree with Terry Fees, who's a wine importer, some of the best Rieslings in the world. And Terry would like to say, yes, people like to say there's two kinds of wines. There's wines you like and wines you don't. And I generally agree, though that doesn't mean that whatever you like is necessarily good or great. It just means that you drink what you like, and that's totally fine. Don't apologize for it. You know, some people will evolve in what they like, and some people will stay right there, and that's cool with me.
And you find that so often too. I mean, if people come into the winery and they'll say, "Well, I started out drinking this, but now I'm drinking this," but yet we have so many that come in and say, "I like sweet wines," and that's it. That's, you know, that's their passion. That's been their passion their whole lives, and they're not going to try and change. They're not going to try something different. And so, you know, it's going to happen. You know, just to reiterate on what you were just saying there, it is true. People will drink what they like, and there's nothing you can do about it.
No, but what they like may change, and it may not, but the key is to always give them options and education and not look down your nose at them. I mean, I don't believe in the Parker model where one opinion rules and it determines what's right and wrong. So
I know, and that's very true, too. That's very true. How long have you been involved with wine?
Oh, boy. The better part of a decade, probably. You know, I started writing the book in early 2008, and that came after I had done some other writing and some other reading. There's a lot of very good wine writing out there, and that inspired me to think, you know, is there a story to tell, or is there a regional story, a picture to kind of paint here? So it started in 2008, but unfortunately, having a 40-hour-a-week plus job, it took me the better part of 2.5-3 years to finish it. But you know, it's been a good amount of years now, and no plans to stop. There's too many stories to tell. You know, there's too much out there.
So there's going to be a Summer in the Glass Part 2.
Now maybe Fall in a Mug. Autumn in a Mug. No,
would work.
No, I'm not sure it'll be a sequel to Finger Lakes. And yeah, well, exactly. Isn't that brilliant how I set it up like that?
Yes, it is.
I tend to think the next book will probably, if it's a wine book, and it probably will be, it will probably not be based in the Finger Lakes. There's a lot of stories to tell, and there's a lot of ideas we have. I wish I could divulge more. We're still sort of hanging with the publisher and talking about that, but they've been very supportive, and they've got a lot of ideas too. So we'll work out the next one real soon.
With Summer in a Glass, what was the inspiration behind the idea and the concept of that?
The concept of the title or the book itself?
The book. Well, and the title, since you mentioned.
Yeah, well, the title of the book comes from the introduction of the book where, you know, I kind of mentioned that the romantic notion of wine is that, oh, you know, the vines suck up their place and they put them right in their glass and, you know, you're drinking a place. And most of the time, that's not the case. And that's not to say that vines are actually sucking up the earth and transporting minerals directly into your glass. What I mean by that is most of the time, most of the wine produced in this world, you're not going to drink and think that it evokes much of a sense of place. But the wine that has special care and special sense of place does. And so I write in the intro, you know, when you think about the Finger Lakes, no matter what the season is, even on a cold winter day, I mean, it can evoke this notion of the idyllic Elysian Finger Lakes image for me, which is Adirondack chairs dotted around the lakeside and someone sitting with a glass of world-class cool climate wine in their glass. And to me, it just transports summer in a glass, whether you're in the middle of winter or in the middle of summer. And the publisher liked that enough, and they said, there's your title. And I said, okay. They're the marketing experts, and it has worked out nicely. But the concept was just to tell a story of the region through about a dozen or 13 people. So each chapter is a different person's individual story. It starts somewhere in their past. Each chapter starts in a different place, somewhere in the person's past, at a moment that led them down the road to what they're doing now, either led them to the Finger Lakes or led them to being the winemaker they are today. And then it transitions to modern times and first person and my journeys and travels and experiences with them. And so those individual mini biographies sort of weave together and tell the story of the region as a whole.
Fantastic. I'm going to definitely have to grab that book. I found out about it less than a week ago, so it's something that I just recently discovered. I have people come into the winery all the time and ask me, what is your favorite wine? I'm going to put you on the spot now. I'm not going to ask you what your favorite is. I'm going to put it even more specific. If you were stuck on a desert island for the rest of your life and you can only have one wine with you, what would that
be? Yeah, I thought about that recently, and I think the only cop-out I'll give you, Ron, is will you give me one red and one white, or you make me pick one?
I'll give you one of each.
Okay, if I'm taking one red and one white, I'll take a white from the Finger Lakes. I'll take a Herman J. Weimer. I will take a Magdalena Vineyard Riesling from Herman J. Weimer. Though if pressed, I would on a European side, I would take a Von Hovel Spätlese from Vellner Sonnener from the Mosel. That's my favorite Mosel Riesling producers. Von Hovel. Outstanding. I think it's better than Prüm. And if I'm taking a red, I'm going to take I'll take a 2009 Moulin-Avant from Jean-Paul Brun in Beaujolais. I'll take a Cru Beaujolais. You know, I'm going to fill up my cellar with $21 a bottle, which I think, you know, is some of the best value wine in the world right now. That's not to say that it beats every first row. Well, I'm listen, after this conversation, that's where I'm going next, trust me. But for me, the reason that Cru Boge is so good is because if you want to drink it on its own, it's great. But a vintage like 2009, it has the depth to hang with any meal you want to make. It's so versatile. It's so good. It's got a mineral cut, but it's also got flesh on the bone. I mean, it's just a beauty. It's just a beauty. It's just what wine should be, man. It's just so good.
2009, though, that's going to need a few years to really bring out some of that complexity.
Well, do you remember, I remember when I was growing up and I knew where the Christmas presents were. And I would see a box poking out from under the bed, and I would think, I'm not supposed to look. I'm not supposed to look. And then I would walk by the room, and I'd still see the box poking out, and I'd say, my mom didn't know she left it poking out. So I would kind of wander in, and I would look a little bit, and I would say, oh, I know what that is. And then I would say, there's another gift in it. And I would say, you got to stop. That's fine with Cru Beaujolais. You buy a case of the 09, which is affordable, and you shouldn't open it now, Ron. You shouldn't peek. You should leave it under the bed. But once in a while, I walk by the cellar and I see it peeking out, and I think, okay, just one. I can do it. I just one. And then I regret it, but it's still so good, young. But you know how good it's going to be. That I agree. If I've got the patience, but my willpower can fill a thimble with those wines. So I've got to.
Uh-huh.
I tell my wife. You got to hide them from me, honey. I tell my wife you got to hide them. They're so good.
What you need to do is you get yourself an offside to some liquor store that has a wine cellar and store them in there. So it has to be an actual effort to go get it.
That is brilliant. I've got friends who have off-site sellers, and they don't have this problem. So I think that's the best idea of the night right there. I love it.
There you go. There you go. That's what it takes, because I'll tell you, I can just see that wine about 7-8 years. That would,
a perfect
party in the mouth. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Well, Evan, your Amazon reviews on the book are just phenomenal. All positive reviews. I don't think I've seen a single bad review. I've been thumbing around since I found out about the book and trying to find stuff about it, and everything I've seen has been good reviews. Mike has told me that he was looking at Amazon and reading the reviews, and everything was great on that. So it looks like it's doing quite well, and we get quite a few listeners on the program here, so hopefully this is going to enlighten people to the book out there and excite them.
Yeah. You're so kind. You're so kind, right? And I really appreciate it. My wife, who is always my she's kind of the marketing manager, and so she always bangs on me for not mention it more often. So I will just say that if your readers have ever read Eric Asimov in the New York Times, I was honored to have a very, very nice New York Times review last month, very easy to find online. Wine Spectator reviewed it last month, was also very, very nice. And it's very easy to find on Amazon. I have never told one reader, get on there and write me a review. And if you hate the book and you want to write a review, you're absolutely welcome to. That's no problem. But so far, the feedback has just been wonderful, and it's been very, very gratifying, for all the work. Well, as a winemaker, and you put up that much work into something, you don't know how it's going to come out. You know, there's a lot of things out of your control, but when you finally have something to present to people, it's very gratifying when they say, they enjoyed it. That's very special.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Evan, thank you so much for taking your time tonight to join us. It was fantastic, very educational, and a lot of fun. And I wish you the best of luck in your book. And when you come out with Fall in a Mug or whatever you want to call it, then email me and we'll get you on the air again.
I like what you do. I've always enjoyed what you do, and I'm going to keep listening to you. It's an honor to be on with you, and we'll talk to you again, Ron.
Thank you very much, Evan. Thank you. And have yourself
you
a very good evening.
You too. Thanks.
Right. Thank Bye now.
Wow, excellent show.
Really.
I was just looking at the reviews here. Highly recommended. Let's see, engaging, entertaining, and it's not a technical book. It's the stories and everything, and it's what I'm seeing here is it's a great read, and it's greatly priced on Amazon. So I would definitely I'm go to their page to order. But anyway,
researching it. I didn't find out about the book until, last week after the program. One of our listeners contacted me and told me about the book. He said that he picked it up and he just couldn't put it down. He's not a big reader on wine books. And he said, but this is just fascinating. It's not really wine. They're not talking about wine. It's stories. It's stories of the people.
Yeah.
It's stories of how they got to where they are and all that. And it just
right.
The excerpts I've read and different things that I've seen, and it's something that could be a good read for anyone out there who just likes to have some stories about people in the wine industry and what they're doing and how they got there. It's just it really is a lot of fun. So both Mike and I give it a thumbs up, although we haven't read it yet. So,
well, based on the reviews, it's definitely I got to put that on my list here. So
Me too. I'm going to have to
definitely good.
Grab it and read it now. And when he comes out with his next books, I hope he does get in touch with me, and we can get him back on the program and talk about his next book. He does have a Facebook page. I'll tell you what that is. Maybe not. I'll tell you what that Facebook page is here in just a couple of seconds. But he does have a Facebook page. And so if anyone wants to log into his Facebook page, it is facebook.com with the number sign, or backslash, number sign, exclamation point, / summer in a glass.
Mm.
Okay. So I don't know why the backslash and exclamation points and all that, but... Facebook.com, the number sign, exclamation point, / summer in a glass. And that's his Facebook page. And a lot of comments on there, a lot of interesting information to keep you up to date on what's going on and what he's doing and everything. So, there's a good way to get a hold of him there. Did you expand this into 8:30?
Yes, we are still live. We have, I'm showing about
a minute.
2 minutes. Okay. I've got two on here. I don't know. I did want to let people know that this coming Saturday you do have a wine class from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. So anybody in the area, come out and enjoy this informative class from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You talk about the history of wines, the grape varietals, diseases of the grapes, glass styles and uses, cork history, oak aging, wine tasting process and scoring or rating of wines, and of course you get to sample wines, and which each one is discussed in detail. So I want to get that out. And Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52. That is exit 285 off of Interstate 75, and you'll go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs for the winery. Or from US 19, you'll go east. And what was it, about 19, 20 miles? I forgot how far that was.
21 miles.
Sheet. There we go. Yes, 21 miles. I was looking at a different my other map here. Give the winery a call. Florida State's Winery. You can reach them by phone at 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. Or visit the winery on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com. And there's also a link there to connect with them on Facebook. You can search for them on Facebook as well, Florida States Winery. And also sign up for the newsletter on the website. And stay in touch with the show by visiting us on Facebook at All About Wine BTR on Facebook, and we give all kinds of show information, and everything is out and on there, before we go live, and that's actually where I was keeping in touch, because I get it on my cell phone, and I go, oh, All About Wine BTR status has been changed, and there's your announcements of who's going to be on, so I go, oh, okay, I know who's here now. That's a good way to keep in touch with the show, as well as right here on Blog Talk Radio, and yeah, it's really cool, and I guess I'm sure we both extend our thanks and appreciation for Bill at Dill's Run and Bed and Breakfast up there in New York, as well as Christina with the Finger Lakes Wine Country Tourism and Marketing Association. Thank you for being on the show, and also to Evan Dawson, author of Summer in a Glass and The Coming of Age. The Coming of Age of Winemaking in the Finger Lakes, And that is available on Amazon, and you can read a couple of excerpts there, see the index, and the reviews are just great. So it looks like a really good read and definitely worth the purchase there. So check it out on Amazon.com. And I think I just did a search for Evan Dawson, and it came up, so you can find it that way. Very simple. We will.
And we're
what do we
on
have?
Recording. We're off live.
Wow. Well, mine's showing 57 seconds.
Yeah, mine. They just the cute little British voice just told me.
Oh. Okay. Well,
so,
there we go. Hello, hello, archive people.
Hello, archive people.
Yeah.
So we're done.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, it just
next
went
week?
On there. It was a good program tonight. I was real happy. We had a little glitch at the beginning there, but we recovered and it worked out well for us.
Okay.
So
next
thank
week,
you all.
What do we have going up next week?
Next week I'm going to finish up New York. There's still some wineries up in the north eastern part of it and different areas like that. So we will finish New York next week.
Okay. So you also tune in
to
us.
Nevada.
Next Thursday will be the 22nd of September. Listen for us then right here on Blog Talk Radio at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'll finish up with New York and go on with All About Wine. And we'll see you all. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for listening on the archives. I really appreciate it. And, keep tuning us in. And, we like the numbers.
It doesn't mean anything, but it's just cool.
Yeah, it's cool statistic wise, but it's just great that people are enjoying the show and listening in and emailing you and sending the comments, and that's a really good thing as well. So
it is. I like
kinda,
that even though they call me to the task because of the program. I appreciate the information. It is, that's how we found out about Evan. So it worked well also. So.
Yeah, so keep the comments coming in. We'd love to hear from you. All right, y'all have a good rest of the week, and we'll see y'all next Thursday on the 22nd of September at 7 p.m. Thanks a lot for listening, and
thank
everybody
you.
Have a good night and a good week. Thank
good
you.
Night.
Good night.